It is Tuesday, July 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. In the next half hour, the United States and other world powers reach a deal with Iran to restrain the Iranian nuclear program in return for easing economic sanctions against Tehran. After years of painstaking negotiations, some observers are praising the agreement, saying it will prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons.
So this is quite sweeping in the way it blocks the plutonium path to a bomb.
We'll also hear from another observer with a sharply different view who thinks the deal makes an eventual nuclear-armed Iran inevitable. That's all ahead on International Edition. The Iran nuclear deal reached on Tuesday is a major diplomatic victory for one of its strongest advocates, U.S. President Barack Obama. Here's how he announced the agreement to the American people in an early morning address from the White House.
Today, because America negotiated from a position of strength and principle, we have stopped the spread of nuclear weapons in this region. Because of this deal, the international community will be able to verify that the Islamic Republic of Iran will not develop a nuclear weapon.
Well, Iran has always insisted that its nuclear ambitions are aimed only at the peaceful production of nuclear energy. Well, one of the ways Iran hopes to produce that energy is through a plutonium reactor that it's built in the region of Iraq. Joseph Cirincione is the head of the Plowshares Fund, a U.S.-based group that advocates for nonproliferation. Here's what he told VOA about how the deal resolves the issue of the Iraq reactor.
Under this deal, Iran has agreed to take out that reactor core, export it out of the country, reconfigure it so it will make a fraction of the plutonium, less than 1 kilogram, and further that it promises that all the fuel, once it comes out of that reactor, will actually be shipped out of the country, and it will never, never construct a reprocessing facility, a plant that could allow it to extract plutonium from any fuel. So this is quite sweeping in the way it blocks the plutonium path to a bomb.
Well, another U.S. nonproliferation expert, Steve Andreasen of the Nuclear Threat Initiative, also gave this view to VOA of the significance of the agreement.
Number one, Iran's capacity to produce a nuclear weapon cannot be erased by any agreement. Secondly, an agreement with Iran can buy valuable time. And thirdly, war with Iran is perhaps the most likely alternative to this deal. Now, on the first point, when I say that the agreement cannot erase Iran's capacity to produce a nuclear weapon, the United States concluded over 7 years ago that Iran has the scientific and technical and industrial capacity to eventually produce a nuclear weapon if it decides to do so. So nothing in this agreement or any agreement can change that fact. The purpose of this agreement is really to preclude Iran from making that decision. And what the agreement does is it stops Iran from building a bomb without violating this agreement in ways that we could detect and then have time to act. So that's point one, the first consideration. Secondly, when I say that with respect to this agreement, it can buy valuable time, this is a region that is the Middle East and the Persian Gulf that is really coming apart at the seams. And the region's problems would be worse if, in the absence of this agreement, Iran actually sprinted to produce a nuclear bomb. What this agreement does is it basically restricts Iran's program to do just that for a prolonged period of time, i.e. it buys valuable time. And thirdly, we have to look at the alternatives when we assess this agreement. And the most likely alternative to this agreement is not some other agreement. Rather, it's the unraveling of the international coalition that has supported the sanctions regime against Iran. We'd certainly have less transparency into Iran's activities. And Iran is likely to then press forward with its nuclear program. It certainly wouldn't continue to abide by the freeze that has been on that program since November of 2013. So in other words, at some point, Iran's actions would bump up against U.S. or Israeli red lines and force a decision on the use of force. And If we make that decision, of course, and this president and the previous president have said that's a decision that they're prepared to make if they have to, at that point you're at war with Iran, and the region, a region that's currently racked by instability, becomes much more unmanageable.
Well, that was Steve Andreasen, national security consultant at the Washington-based nonproliferation group Nuclear Threat Initiative. Well, as I was mentioning, some observers have been sharply critical of the deal. Among them is Omri Sarin of the pro-Israel group The Israel Project, whose mission is to inform the media about Israel-related issues. I asked him earlier whether Iran still could have a plutonium path to a bomb.
Well, of course it could. The deal allows Iran to keep its heavy water infrastructure in place despite UN resolutions that had called on it to cease heavy water work. So the original idea was that you would force them to make Arak into a light water reactor. Because they'll be allowed to keep their heavy water infrastructure intact, when this deal expires in 15 years on the plutonium track and they're again permitted to build heavy water reactors, they'll have all the infrastructure in place to pick up where they left off, except by that time they'll be an economically resurgent powerhouse.
I've also heard that Iran has developed so much nuclear know-how and expertise that there's no deal on earth that could get Iran to unlearn what it's already learned. So don't we just have to live with a nuclear-capable Iran?
It's a terrible argument, Michael. The idea that nuclear know-how can't be bombed may be true, but nuclear know-how can certainly be suffocated. Nuclear scientists need places to work. They need jobs. They need places to keep up their skills. If we would have forced the Iranians to dismantle their nuclear infrastructure, then their nuclear scientists would have had nothing to do and would have transitioned out of that industry very, very quickly. The idea that you can't bomb away nuclear knowledge, it's like saying that you can't bomb away an auto sector. Okay, but if you shut down the auto sector, then auto workers have nothing to do.
Well, supporters of the deal also say it's much better to deny Iran a nuclear weapons capability for at least the next few years than to not do so, because the Middle East is already full of so many conflicts that it just doesn't need another one right now. Doesn't that seem reasonable?
That's a deeply dishonest argument. This deal fuels wars in two separate ways. The first is it drops the conventional arms embargo against Iran. It does so in 5 years, but Iran's neighbors won't wait for it to stockpile the strategic ballistic missiles that it will now be able to buy. They'll immediately move to get ahead of the curve. And the same thing is true, Michael, in a nuclear context. You know, the Saudis have told us, in as many words, that they won't wait for Iran to get a nuclear weapon, that they will act when they believe that it's inevitable that Iran will get a nuclear weapon. And as we know, as the president has admitted on NPR, this plan sunsets in 13, 14, 15 years, at which point Iran will be allowed to have a zero breakout capability, which means there'll be a screw's turn away from a nuclear weapon. This deal will incentivize every actor in the region to stockpile conventional weapons and incentivize at least a couple of them, the Saudis and the Turks, to acquire their own nuclear capabilities. It fuels wars.
Well, you know, another key selling point of the deal from the point of view of the authors is that there isn't any other realistic alternative short of the U.S. going to war with Iran. What might you consider to be, you know, a realistic alternative?
Well, first of all, let's get something out of the way right at the beginning. The idea that there's no alternative is not an excuse for the president's bad deal. It's a result of diplomacy that didn't create alternatives. Now, of course, if you shred the sanctions regime like this administration has done, and you take away economic tools like this administration has done, then suddenly you can look up and say there are no other options because you took away all the other options. Coercive diplomacy, supporting America's allies, if necessary, negotiating with the Iranians as we've done over the past 2 years, with a little bit of push me, pull you, a little bit of us giving the money, a little bit of them not pushing the envelope on nukes, would have been a far better alternative. And in any case, this deal is worse than no deal. It is a deal that provides Iran with conventional weapons. It's a deal that provides Iran with nuclear weapons. It's a deal that provides Iran with the money in order to pursue both of them, $150 billion. And, you know, you don't need an excuse not to do something bad. This deal is a terrible deal.
And that was Omri Sarin, head of press and strategy for the Israel Project, speaking to me earlier from Vienna. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Over 350 million people worldwide suffer from hearing loss. But a new app called YouSound can turn a smartphone into a digital hearing tool. And it optimizes a smartphone's audio output to an individual's personal hearing needs. Users like Julio Fernandez say it helps them reconnect with the world.
I had totally and completely isolated myself from society. I wouldn't go out with friends. I wouldn't go out and see them.
The YouSound app enables a smartphone to capture conversations in real time and compensates the sound or recorded audio for the user, just like a hearing aid. Dr. Victorio Stock.
I just don't think it works. I can confirm it works. We're already using it with our patients.
The YouSound app is not free. It costs about $30 a year, but has customers already in some 150 countries. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. The Iran nuclear deal will soon be presented to the U.S. Congress, where President Obama could have a tough time persuading Republican lawmakers to support it. Earlier, my colleague Susan Yaki asked our congressional correspondent Michael Bowman what happens next.
There will be 2 months of consideration of congressional deliberations, and we expect weeks of hearings and Obama administration officials going to Capitol Hill to testify on this very subject. Congress gave itself a 2 month period to review any deal that might emerge with Iran and the ability to vote up or down, yes or no, majority votes in both houses of this Republican-controlled legislature. President Obama would have the ability, should Congress vote against the deal, to veto it. And then Republicans would need significant numbers of Democrats to join with them in opposition if they were to try to override a presidential veto.
What is the sentiment up there already about the pact?
That depends on who you ask. I spent a couple of hours in the halls of Congress speaking with various lawmakers. Republicans are significantly more skeptical. In fact, some are openly hostile to this pact. Democrats seem to be taking a more measured response. There is very little cheering going on, but Democrats at least seem to be willing to look at the deal, to review it, and their initial impressions seem to be much more favorable. But there is definitely a divergent view on Capitol Hill, depending on who you speak with and the party to which they belong.
And that was VOA's Michael Bowman speaking with International Edition's Susan Yaki. Well, for more on Iran, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio to tell us what people are saying about the agreement on the web. Hi, G. So what do you have for us today?
Hi, Michael. I'm going to focus on what the presidential hopefuls are saying about the agreement on Twitter. Beginning with the Republican side, let's take a look at Marco Rubio's account. He tweeted 10 times on the nuclear deal during the last 10 hours. That's a tweet every hour.
That's a lot.
In one of the tweets, he wrote, "President Obama has consistently negotiated from a position of weakness, giving concessions to a regime that has American blood in its hands."
Well, I guess that's more or less the position of other Republican candidates, right?
Oh, absolutely. The latest Republican to join the presidential race, Scott Walker, has also been quite prolific on this issue. And Jeb Bush didn't mince his words at all. He tweeted, "The nuclear agreement with Iran is a dangerous, deeply flawed and short-sighted deal."
So what about Republican candidate Donald Trump? He's one of the leaders. What is he saying?
Well, he hasn't tweeted anything about this issue, which is, you know, quite surprisingly, given how vocal he is usually. And guess who else has been quiet?
One of the leading Democrats, maybe?
Exactly. Hillary Clinton hasn't been tweeting at all today on this subject, but she has said in the past that she views an Iran nuclear deal as an important step. As for Bernie Sanders, he tweeted, "The Iran deal is a victory for diplomacy over saber rattling." Michael?
Well, thanks very much for that wrap-up, G. That was our G. Abby Lee, and you can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee, and that's Abby with an E. Thank you. Well, turning to the financial markets, Alexis Christophers joins us from our New York bureau. Alexis, how did the oil markets react to the news of the Iran deal?
We did see oil prices stabilize and then actually move higher as the trading day went on. And that's really because this deal between Iran and six world powers was anticipated. So these were some traders coming back in and seeing this as a buying opportunity. Analysts say the expected rise in global supply has been priced into the market, and they don't expect Iranian oil to hit the marketplace until the end of this year.
What are observers of the oil market saying about the possibility of other oil producers in the region cutting their production in anticipation of a rise in the Iranian exports?
I'm not hearing that so much as I am hearing that perhaps we're going to see a price war amongst the oil-producing nations. I spoke to one analyst who believes we're going to see oil hit $40 a barrel by the end of the year.
Some other big news today, potentially a Chinese takeover bid for a U.S. chip maker that would be a very big deal indeed. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. If this deal were to happen, it would be the largest takeover of an American company by a Chinese one, Tsinghua Unigroup. We're getting reports that it is preparing to bid $23 billion for Micron Technology, which is one of the largest memory chip makers in the U.S. Neither side is confirming that there is a bid in the works. Some analysts are saying this deal is highly unlikely to get past U.S. regulators, who are really increasingly viewing semiconductors as a strategic industry. Micron is really the last major maker in the U.S. of chips.
Can you give us a quick update on Starbucks and its latest expansion plans?
Yeah, well, pretty soon Africans will be able to order a cup of Starbucks coffee. Starbucks has inked a deal with a franchisor called Taste Holdings in Johannesburg. The first stores will open early next year. And this deal means Starbucks can now sell coffee for the first time in some of the places where it sources it. Michael?
So good news for coffee drinkers in that part of the world. Alexis Christophers in our New York bureau. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Watching a movie or TV show in 3D can make you feel that you're part of the on-screen action. But some viewers say that 3D movies make them sick and complain of eye strain, disorientation, or motion sickness. Scientists wanted to find out if 3D programs can produce possibly dangerous or even life-threatening side effects in viewers. So they gathered 433 volunteers between the ages of 4 and 82. They put their volunteers through a variety of coordination tests that were administered before and after watching both 3D and 2D versions of the hit movie Toy Story.
To infinity and beyond!
Some of the 3D viewing participants did report symptoms like eye strain and dizziness, but data from motion measurement devices they wore did not indicate any real difference between their coordination and those who didn't report any unpleasant effects. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And this is VOA's International Edition. Jamaican artist Omi has a song, Cheerleader, that has quickly made its way to number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 Singles Chart. International Edition's David Byrd and Larry London chatted about that song and Omi's rise to pop stardom.
He's from Jamaica, and his hit is just burning up the charts. Omi. Larry, who is Omi?
Well, let me explain it to you, David. I'm glad you asked. Omi is Omar Samuel Paisley, and he's from Jamaica, as you mentioned. He has a special distinction. His record is the longest consecutive number one in the UK from a Jamaican artist in chart history in the UK.
More than Bob Marley.
That's right. 4 weeks consecutively. Number one on the charts. Right now, number two in the United States on the Billboard Hot 100, but it is the number one selling song in the United States, and it's called Cheerleader. And there are a lot of prognosticators who are predicting that this particular song will move to number one next week.
When I need motivation, my one solution is my queen, cause she stays strong. Yeah, yeah. She is always in my corner, right there when I wanna. All these other girls are tempting, but I'm empty when you're gone. And they say, do you need me? Do you think I'm pretty? Do I make you feel like cheating? I'm like, no, not really, cause oh, I think that I found myself a cheerleader. She is always right there when I need her. Oh, I
think that I found myself a cheerleader. She is always right there when I need her. She walks like a model. She grants my wishes like a...
He's from Jamaica.
Yes, he is.
Is his style, do you think, does he borrow from some of his heritage? People like, you know, Bob Marley, Shabba Ranks, people like that. Or is he more on the kind of the John Legend end of that kind of smooth?
He's a more modern time, modern day reggae sounding singer. He doesn't do it in the traditional Bob Marley vein, but reggae's got a certain distinctive style. And there's no mistaking the fact that this is a reggae song. And recently, I mean, here in the United States, we haven't been quick to embrace reggae songs. There have been few and, you know, not many. But recently it's Shaggy and Sean Paul and Magic a couple of years ago with a hit called Root. So this is the first time in several years that a reggae song has made it to almost the top. And as I say, many people think next week we're going to be saying this is the number one song.
Who does he list as his influences? Does he draw from other people, or is it just kind of, this is my thing?
This is his thing, and there are some. In fact, I was talking to Ray McDonald, who said that this is probably a one-hit wonder kind of guy, because we hadn't heard of him before. This is a song that he actually released originally in 2012, but now he's re-released it with Felix Jaehn, who's a very famous German producer. And so the song's been remixed and remade, and now, bang, it's near the top of the chart.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for that. That is OMI, and that's O-M-I.
O-M-I.
Okay. O-M-I. And if you have any questions or comments about OMI, or you want to hit Larry up on Twitter, that's at VOA underscore music. You can also watch Larry and listen to Larry do Border Crossings, his show where he has all kinds of people from the music and entertainment world come in. That's on www.voanews.com. Larry, thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
And that's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. We'll catch you later.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In an historic achievement, the United States, along with its P5+1 partners, the European Union, and Iran, have completed a comprehensive nuclear accord. The deal, reached July 13th, cuts off all pathways to an Iranian nuclear weapon and, in a phased sequence, lifts nuclear sanctions on Iran. President Barack Obama said the deal meets every single one of the bottom lines that we established when we achieved a framework this spring. In addition to blocking all pathways to a bomb, the deal will put in place an inspection and transparency regime necessary to verify that objective. Iran will remove 2/3 of its installed centrifuges. It will not use its advanced centrifuges to produce enriched uranium for the next decade, and it will get rid of 98% of its stockpile of enriched uranium. Iran will also modify its reactor in Iraq so that it will not produce weapons-grade plutonium and will ship the spent fuel from the reactor out of the country for the lifetime of the reactor. President Obama said that the international community put sanctions on Iran to get a diplomatic resolution.
And that is what we have done. Without this deal, there would be no agreed-upon limitations for the Iranian nuclear program. Such a scenario would make it more likely that other countries in the region would feel compelled to pursue their own nuclear programs, threatening a nuclear arms race in the most volatile region of the world.
Mr. Obama cautioned that reaching a nuclear accord will not resolve all of our differences with Iran, including Iran's support for terrorism and its use of proxies to destabilize the region. The U.S. sanctions related to terrorism, Iran's ballistic missile program, and its human rights violations will be maintained. But President Obama reiterated his promise to the Iranian people that the United States will always be open to engagement on the basis of mutual interests and mutual respect.
Our differences are real, and the difficult history between our nations cannot be ignored. But it is possible to change. A different path, one of tolerance and peaceful resolution of conflict, leads to more integration into the global economy, more engagement with the international community, and the ability of the Iranian people to prosper and thrive.
This deal offers an opportunity to move in a new direction, President Obama said. We should seize it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.